I saw myself then in the full bloom and pride of youth, for I was not yet 19, actually at the head of so large a fortune, as it would have been even the height of impudence in me to have raised my wishes, much more my hopes to. And that this unexpected elevation did not turn my head, I owed to the pains my benefactor had taken to form and prepare me for it, as I owed his opinion of my management of the vast possessions he left me, to what he had observed of the prudential economy I had learned under Mrs. Cole, of which the reserve he saw I had made was a proof and encouragement to him. But, alas, how easily is the enjoyment of the greatest sweets in life, in present possession, poisoned by the regret of an absent one. But my regret was a mighty and just one, since it had only my truly beloved Charles for its object. As soon, however, as I was mistress of this unexpected fortune, I felt more than ever how dear he was to me, from its insufficiency to make me happy, whilst he was not to share it with me. My earliest care, consequently, was to endeavour at getting some account of him. But all my researches produced me no more light than that his father had been dead for some time, not so well as even with the world, and that Charles had reached his port of destination in the South Seas, where, finding the estate he was sent to recover dwindled to a trifle by the loss of two ships in which the bulk of his uncle's fortune lay, he was come away with a small remainder, and might, perhaps, according to the best advice, in a few months return to England, from whence he had, at the time of this my inquiry, been absent 2 years and 7 months, a little eternity in love. You cannot conceive with what joy I embraced the hopes thus given me of seeing the delight of my heart again. But as the term of months was assigned it, in order to divert and amuse my impatience for his return, I set out on a journey for Lancashire, with an equipage suitable to my fortune, and with a design purely to revisit my place of nativity, for which I could not help retaining a great tenderness. Another favourite intention I had, to look out for my relations, though I had none besides distant ones, and prove a benefactress to them. Then Mrs. Cole's place of retirement, lying in my way, was not amongst the least of the pleasures I had proposed to myself in this expedition. I had taken nobody with me but a discreet, decent woman to figure it as my companion, besides my servants, and was scarce got into an inn about 20 miles from London, where I was to pass the night, when such a storm of wind and rain sprang up as made me congratulate myself on having got under shelter before it began. This had continued a good half hour, when, bethinking me of some directions to be given to the coachman, I stepped into the hall kitchen, where he was, and where, whilst I was talking to him, I slantingly observed two horsemen driven in by the weather, and both wringing wet, one of whom was asking if they could not be assisted with a change while their clothes were dried. But heavens, who can express what I felt at the sound of a voice ever present to my heart, and that is now rebounded at? Or when, pointing my eyes toward the person it came from, they confirmed its information, in spite of so long an absence, and of a dress one would have imagined studied for a disguise, a horseman's great coat with a stand-up cape and his hat flapped. But what could escape the piercing alertness of a sense surely guided by love? A transport, then, like mine, was above all consideration or schemes of surprise. And I, that instant, with the rapidity of the emotions that I felt the spur of, shot into his arms, crying out as I threw mine round his neck, "My life, my soul, my Charles!" And without further power of speech, swooned away under the pressing agitations of joy and surprise. Recovering from my entrancement, the first object that my eyes opened on was my supreme wish, Charles, on one knee holding me fast by the hand and gazing on me with a transport of fondness. Observing my recovery, he attempted to speak and give vent to his patience of hearing my voice again, to satisfy him once more that it was me. But the mightiness of the surprise, continuing to stun him, choked his utterance. He could only stammer out a few broken, half-formed, faltering accents, which my ears, greedily drinking in, spelt and put together so as to make out their sense. "After so long, so cruel, an absence, my dearest Fanny, can it be you?" stifling me at the same time with kisses that, stopping my mouth, at once prevented the answer that he panted for, and increased the delicious disorder in which all my senses were rapturously lost. I clung to him, I clasped him, as if to hinder him from escaping me again. "Where have you been? How could you leave me? Say you are still mine, that you still love me, and thus I forgive you. Forgive my hard fortune in favour of this restoration." All these interjections breaking from me in that wildness of expression that justly passes for eloquence in love, drew from him all the returns my fond heart could wish or require. Our caresses, our questions, our answers, for some time observed no order, all crossing or interrupting one another in sweet confusion, whilst we exchanged hearts at our eyes, and renewed the ratifications of a love unbated by time or absence. Not a breath, not a motion, not a gesture on either side, but what was strongly impressed with it. Our hands, locked in each other, repeated the most passionate squeezes, so that their fiery thrill went to the heart again.